I'm gonna just read it. They come unstuck and they come alive, away from the dark and doors. They come together so they'll survive and shed their blackened clothes. O lady love and manly woe, set free into the crowd. I love them all, I love them so, from underneath my shroud. I see them kiss and I see them cry, so human and so free. Hark, haters and their kind so sly, just pray they don't pick me. A look then shared, a comment passed, a push and then a shove. Crowds unabashed, though much harassed, don't let it spoil the love. O lady love and manly woe, set free into the crowd. I love them all, I love them so, from underneath my shroud.
Thank you, Jude. Next we have a bit of music, I think. Oh, shame on.
Hello. I can't stay, unfortunately, because I'm going to go busking, which is going to be lots of fun. So to warm up, I thought I'd give you guys a song, which I wrote back in November for a play that I was in. So I don't really know if it has a name, but anyway, this is it. So sorry if you can't hear the ukulele very well, but I'll try and sing loud enough.
My body rots, but what happens to the sound of thoughts and all the things that make me me, the things that I can see? We try to build a home of twigs and bits of skin. We think we're strong as bones, but bones are fragile things, like thoughts and all the things that make me me, or the things that I can see, or the things that I can be.
Really nice. I hope you make a ton of money there. Okay, well, after this we have Bernadette McCarthy.
Yeah, this poem is promoting a free event that's going to be held in the Camden Palace Hotel Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. It's a free introduction to the Arabic language with a brief consideration of Arabic love poetry. So that's next Tuesday week. Modern conversational Arabic. He is a brother, not a father, serving the girls leaf tea from our thermos. My Arabic teacher talked about her husband, who is courting High Court caliphs into signing refugees' papers, stringing their tails from one night to the next. A good man, and without him syntax snagged, though between us the ragged ends met. Her bright price mucking up the Nile callows, an equation that outwore the cloven ears of asylum. The ministerial handshake, ached for, yet awkward in the end, cuffs brushing at a wake. She kittered an empty cup from my hand, pinched her veil. I'm sorry for the troubles in the East. Then took the scrap of chalk again, and pulling back her sleeve, blazed us down the seams of sound succeeding sound. Tonguing tacit vowels into the chastity of consonants, as algebra binds the broken parts, to Obi Universe and to her lace of ligature. Assalamu alaikum. I knew that the words were backwards, that a dagger hung over the aleph. An assassin could stop my glottis with the sadist twist of salad. But follow the letters off the page into her eyes. Dunyazad, world freer, on the azimuth of her brow, who with the wisdom of a scripture seemed to say, you can burn me, but the words will still be spoken. You can shoot me, but my children will live on. You can scorn me, but I am your mother, your daughter, your father, your brother. Thanks.
Thank you, Bernadette, or as we say in Arabic, shukran. And next we have Rosie O'Regan.
This is very short. I wasn't going to read, but then Richard kind of inspired me. I have this one for a while. I thought I humbly bow to your greatness. So I think, therefore I am thought. I drink. Therefore I am drunk. I breathe. Therefore I am not I am.
That's food for thought, Rosie. Okay, Matthew Moynihan. Where we go?
Tin of sardines. So two short ones. The first one's called Le Vie en Rose, and it's Valentine's Day and love from the perspective of a plant, or a flower rather. You see me in the shops on Valentine's Day, standing proud and erect, awaiting your choice, a choice some believe could lead to wedding bells and pollination. But I have my own love story, a story never told. Inception, earth, air, sun, water, the elements, my demi-creators, demi-destructors, yearning me to blossom. The earth and its maternal embrace only to strangle, the air feeding me stomatically, only to suffocate, the water lubricating, nourishing, only to one day drown, and the sun showing the light, the way, only to scorch. The elements chew up and spit out, then divorce, now I am bitter. The second one is one I wrote in the last couple of weeks, and it's called Incarcerated. Incarcerated within the four concrete walls of a tremulous anarchical mind. Where is the key? Is it to be found in amber liquids or a general practitioner's script? No. There is no key because the prison officer threw it away into the Nordic fjord, or into the icy ripples of that Nordic fjord you called your ego many years ago and crackled with laughter as you almost drowned clutching for it. There is no key, for this is the perpetual prison of the soul. So now is the time to stop looking and accept your sentence until the walls come crumbling down with the corrosion of a lifetime. The liberator is time, and time is aplenty, so throw out your watch, batten down the hatches, and embrace these four walls that wrap the Richter scale each day, for at least you have walls. They'll all come tumbling down someday, and henceforth you shall roam, my boy.
Thank you, Matthew. And next we have Seamus Harrington.
Hey. Thanks, Sue. You must let me have the name of your hairstyle.
It's a lawnmower.
Why?
Computer problems again. First time I've done this month, so free downloads, this is what could happen. Free downloads, they've altered my application, activated my archives, booted my browser, buried my broadband, bookmarked my bits, connected my console, captured my cartridge, clicked on my cookies, commandeered my cursor, dropped down my devices, delved in my downloads, documented my data, dragged out my driver, displayed my desktop, erased my errata, encrypted my emails, fancied my favorites, fumbled my floppy. Fragmented my fonts, firewalled my folders, gorged on my gigabytes, grouped up my game ports, hijacked my hardware, hacked at my hyperlink, hung out my homepage, hosted my hard drive, inserted my icon, interrupted my intranet, jellied my Java, jumpered my jack plug, keystroked my kernel, kneaded my knickknacks, logged on my laptop, labeled my language, massaged my poor mouse, merged with my modem, minimized my monitor, muddled my memory, memorized my moniker, negated my network, networked my nonsense, opened my outputs, outsourced my options, plagiarized my process, programmed my printer, punctured my pop-ups, partitioned my password, queried my QWERTY, questioned my query, quoted my quandary, raided my right-click, recycled my registry, selected my software, sampled my startup, serviced my smart drive, scheduled my scanner, selected my shortcuts, trespassed my trackball, trojaned my toolbar, uncovered my uploads, underlined my undo, violated my version, vetoed my vectors, vented my volumes, wormed in my window, winkled my wizard, X-rated my excerpts, yawned at my yarns, zeroed my zip drive. Thank you.
We should get your computer engineer to fix that problem with you.
Bring it to your ear, sir.
At number 4A, very optimistically at number 4A, but actually number 8, Joe Sweeney.
Thank you. I'm going to read a little extract from an essay on age from my book, Tilting at Windmills, which was published in December. And this piece is called Birthday Parties. If you are ill, do people come to your house to celebrate? If you have a fever and your temperature rises another degree, do people cram into your bedroom and sing songs? Of course not. Yet, when they hear that it's your birthday, they arrive clutching bottles of wine and six packs, looking very cheerful, despite the fact that you are taking another step closer to the grave. Birthdays should not be treated in this frivolous, cavalier fashion. Each birthday is a warning, a scout sent ahead by death to remind you of his claim on you. From your earliest moments, from the day when you were being half drowned at the font, another shadowy figure was waiting backstage. He had a contract out on you. And every year thereafter, on your birthday, he returns, and while you are being distracted with useless gifts, books you'll never read, and coloured candles, this shadowy godfather, this mafioso supremo, is doing the tally, hauling in the most valuable gift of all, your precious timeline, your life itself. Now, when you're young, birthday parties are light-hearted affairs. They dangle loose as a daisy chain around your neck. The days are halcyon, the nights full of romantic dreams. The years ahead seem to stretch on forever. With each passing year, however, the daisy chain tightens like a prisoner's collar. It gets heavier, becomes a millstone. Each year the Reaper's emissary knocks on the appointed day, and you feel more and more like hiding in a back room. You tiptoe nervously around, keeping quiet, hoping he'll go away. You hope that maybe this year no one will remember. Maybe this year the old godfather will give you a break. If you feel like this as your birthday approaches, remember you are not alone. Old and middle-aged people all over the world are exactly the same. If you could watch them on Google Earth, you would see these birthday boys and girls from Llandudno to Luxembourg, Cairo to Karsaivin, Mexico to Mauritania, ducking furtively out of sight down dark alleys and side streets as if they were fugitives from the law. But they are not criminals. They simply dread going home because they know the Reaper will be knocking. Scythe in one hand, birthday card in the other. They're afraid to be found in. They're afraid to be found out. They're looking forward to friends singing happy birthday the way turkeys look forward to carolers going past the farm gate singing jingle bells. With each passing year, birthday parties turn more and more into sinister dramas. Relatives confer in low tones in the kitchen, pushing wax sticks firmly down into the birthday cake, as if to remind you that you cannot be hanging around forever like a vampire and not leaving any money to your descendants. Next, the candles are lit, the main lights are turned off, and your relatives stand in the doorway holding the cake. Their faces glow eerily in the candlelight, like death lit up, as they slowly advance towards the table. An expectant silence falls as they put the cake down. You are led to it, like a French aristocrat being led to the guillotine. You stretch out your neck and blow like mad in an effort to quell the inferno. The number of candles makes you feel dizzy, and you have your work cut out not to fall headfirst into the flames. Red-faced and breathless, and having failed to blow out most of the candles, you are forced to pinch out the remaining ones between your thumb and finger. People turn their heads away, pretending they haven't spotted you cheating. With the smell of singed hair in your nostrils, hair you can ill afford to lose, you straighten yourself with what dignity remains. People burst into applause. The whole thing is inhuman. Next, some bright spark pipes up with happy birthday, as if it was an inspired and original idea. Children, grandchildren, in-laws, outlaws, so-called friends, former colleagues, and a large number of gate-crashing neighbours who've only come for the grub all join in with gusto. Their eyes gleam with unnatural enthusiasm, like those of a lynching mob in an old western. People sing cheerily about you being a jolly good fellow, when all you're thinking of is that you're 1 year closer to being a jolly dead fellow. Your relatives are not bad people. They are not planning to hang you themselves. But they're all looking hopeful that you've made a will. They hope you live a long, happy life. Reasonably long, anyway. But they can't entirely banish from their minds the thought that one day your death may help them pay off their mortgages. In ancient cultures, as you get older, you are treated with more respect, not less. In our society, the older you get, the more people seem to think that they have a right to ask you all kinds of intrusive questions. What age are you really? Some brazen child asks as he munches one of your sausage rolls. In an effort to lessen the tension brought about by this question, guests make jokes about age, intended perhaps to defuse the situation. You look around at all the laughing faces, and you can't help wondering, what are they so happy about? It's not that you want to be a party pooper. You just want to stop getting older. You want the guillotine to stop descending, clocks to stop ticking like time bombs. The only birthday present that would please you would be a time machine to travel back and undo the damage. What you want is to live a long life, forever if possible. At the very least, you want to live long enough to spend your own hard-earned savings. You want your children and grandchildren to go out and earn their own money the way you did. That is what you want. But what do you get? Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. And they follow you around the house singing it the way mourners follow a cortege. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe, for reminding us all. But anyway, Charles Clark, we have the duty to cheer us up now.
By a strange coincidence, my opening lines also take off from the same point. If you've ever been in the Crawfords, at least in the old days, there was always to be seen a self-portrait by one of Cork's brilliant, very short-lived painters, Samuel Ford. He does not contemplate or look in the face of death, but pleasant, agreeable, provincial, and with great curiosity, he renders on a canvas of modest proportions a face to be seen any day in Hatton Street.
Thank you, Charles. And next we have Michael Ray.
The Butcher's Dilemma. My father gave me origami pigs. He'd make them out of 20 euro notes, put them in my palm and say, "Think, Orwell. Think of all the cuts this note will take. Think about the cognizance of pigs." They had pointed ears and trotters, their snouts snub, neatly turned up. Each time I'd promise myself that this one was for keeps, but there would always come the day when I would smooth away the shoulder creases, folds and hocks, release a little grief. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a while. And next we have Melissa Collins.
Hi, I'm visiting for a few days from the US, so thank you for having me. This one is called Love's Labor. Give me deep grooves, lines like valleys, signs that I've laughed, signs that I've loved, but not really, no, don't really. Give me stretch and labor and the blessing of new fruit, marks that I've given all I could give, but don't really, no, not really. Give me a song, my rhythm joined to create sonatas, sonatinas, preludes, dissonance, undertones, overtones, subtleties, and free flow, but no, don't give, don't let me hear. Grooves and valleys are pathways for storms and raging rivers. Stretch and labor, sinew snaps and life lays slack. Songs end and records scratch, leaving deep grooves for raging rivers made by the labor of the needle, oh so sharp. No. Let me begin with the roar of the red current and the beat of my drum, tattoo, 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 tattoo. And I will build the earth that can hold the river should the floodgate give. I will cradle the nest and newness in my branches that will know how to bend like the reed. And my rhythm will never get lost in the song, will never be drowned. I will not say no, nor turn my head. The casing cracks for the seedling to reach the sun, and yellow fuzz gasps, wet and matted from the shell. The casing, the shell, they cry out in pain. Love's labor. Tattoo, tattoo, tattoo. tattoo. Thank you, Melissa. I hope you come back. Yeah. And next we have Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Sue. And it's called Kiss the Dove. On staple gun of an embroidered laser, you fight your corner, a warrior alone. More honourable for that, defend your love in her absence, nothing found wanting there. When a fellow student held me in his arms, it was wonderful, but it grieved me too. His seldom coming burned my heart, it's still a light, wanting the circumstance. Electricity still between bodies sings, but not your own, fishing dark water. For pearl of great price, a treasure descending. Distance the better, true love never dissolves. The counted heart adjourned for today, and here the soul pressurizes me. Every time I go out, drink sullied, enjoyment is destroyed to settle scores. As caesura at wrists induces sorrow, a vengeance sorts induce regret. A hunger of the heart cuts his own artery to plead forever the legacy of youth. Not to worry. Just get up and smile. Think of those worse off, stand erect. An opportune bloodbath awaits your reality readily as a drunken kiss pays its own price. Thanks.
Thank you, Patricia. And next we have Larry O'Connell.
Thanks, Sue. Yesterday was Mother's Day, and I wrote this for my mum quite a while ago. She has passed on now. It's called Still Life. My tired key turns in the lock, the click easing my racing thoughts to a quieter register. I slip into the waiting piece, grateful to close out the cold and snuggle into the heated house. Light cuts a wedge in the carpet as I push the front room door. Mother is there, a center of calm. She has seen to things, prepared a fowl, baked apple pie, stoked up the fire, and fetched the milk. I watch a program she has taped while I was out with friends. She has become the steady glow in the hearth of my existence, smoothing away past fixations that kept us at arm's length. For me, this is a time of grace that we can share together. I know a bitter day will come when the sharp, dry bite of my key will echo in an empty house. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. And next we have Anton Floyd.
Determined to make a public declaration of love, in that for the past month we've been living with the threat of a positive biopsy result for my wife, and it came back negative. So, when it burns in our hearts, love, I mean, when love burns, it changes the chemistry, the coordinate geography of the self changes, so that the veil, the scales fall, and eyes concentrate beyond the ordinary. Deaf-blind Helen Keller, on her woodland walk, could with her fingertips see a tree come into leaf, feel in the quiver of a branch the timbre of a bird singing. So when it comes, love with all its discombobulating force, we might hear the grass grow, the squirrel's heart beat. We might divine the angel hungers, what ghosts wander in people's hearts, the freight we each carry in our voices, those undelivered syllables, that roaring sense, the other side of silence. Dreaming of Wallace Stevens. Last night I was asleep in my crisp white sheets, and now awake in my boots, I remember that I dreamed last night of baboons and periwinkles. And I remember the last part of the dream. It was so vivid that it woke me. It was of an insurance man in a train on his way home from the office, drunk with fatigue and asleep in his shoes. He was talking in his sleep. I think he was dreaming of sailors catching tigers in red weather. Today, I have decided to buy you a present, a beaded ceinture and socks of lace, and you may care to choose a patterned nightgown in any color combination, rings of green and purple, or of yellow and green rings, maybe hoops of blue and yellow. I shall fix the clock too. It shall be always 1 minute before 10 o'clock.
Well, thank you very much. And then next we have Sean Bent.
Hello. This is a little bit different to what I normally do, because normally when I'm up here I talk about like Tinder or something stupid that happens to me on Facebook. This is a little bit different. This is about something that happened to me on Saturday, just gone. I hadn't written in quite a while actually, in about a few months, and this particular event was kind of, for me it was quite traumatic, so it kind of got me writing again. It doesn't have a title yet. Whose cat is that? Is the owner around? Or is it alone? Does it even have an owner? It doesn't have a collar. Its collar is tabby. It's not too heavy. Less than a year old by my reckoning. And it doesn't look unhealthy. But what is it doing on this footpath? Where do its tracks lead to? A bathroom? A kitchen window? I don't know. But it'll probably be fine. I mean, come on, look, it's not going to jump in the water beside us. Too smart for that. It knows. This cat's probably been here before. Streetwise, climatized to the harms of life in a city. Sounds of cars and people busy in everyday matter for this traveled tabby. And it ran across the road, confident in its path. If cats made human sounds, I anthropomorphize a laugh, a vain ha-ha in the face of danger, a seasoned gambler on another nightly wager. It ran, but never reached the other side of the road. And it was alone, as two cars and a bus smashed it to pieces. And it screamed and screamed, as apparently only cats scream. And lying there in the middle of the road, beyond consciousness, its legs twitching, looked like a dream of running. An aftershock of a shot to a central nervous system. And I ran to wrap my coat around this dying soul in the middle of the road, first meaning to unfold it, but then deciding to hold it in my hand away from my clothes. A dripping dead cat with an eye hanging from an eye hole, and I brought it back to the footpath. And another person and I shared looks of utter horror, I could feel us both looking back, reanalyzing our actions. Perhaps if we'd known this cat's lack of experience or realized from the signs of the situation, we wouldn't have failed to act, and this cat would still be alive now. Perhaps we'd find the owner, or last resort, give her a temporary home. In my room, shut the door so my roommates don't know. Hope the landlord doesn't find out. Muffin, you better not fucking be out. Not knowing what else to do, I brought it to Anglesey Garda Station, thinking they'd know what to do with the body. And two guards said, sure, we haven't a clue. It's the council's job to know what to do with cats and other subhuman life. And they strolled away into the maelstrom of Cork City on a loud drunken Saturday night. And me just there, dead cat in my arms. A truly bizarre situation to be in. Time to find the street corner or dump it in a bin. For the rain will have to be fire and street mice widows. And the next morning as I passed my spot by, the blood was gone, no sign of a tabby. Only dust and noise in a dull, catless Cork City. Thank you.
Oh, surreal. David Jordan.
Thanks. This is a short poem. It's called Mana. There is dew on the ground and on the tongues of leaves. Dew on the barbed wire and on the heavy morning floor. The sound of a motor car soft through the veil doesn't perplex your membrane. The silent lazy jet overhead scarring the sky doesn't disturb your tranquil bed. Early morning flour, heavy and glazed with water. Manna for your machine, manna for your nine daughters. Always it stands in pure readiness and fire. Thanks.
Thank you, David. And next, all the way from Limerick, we have Joe Healy.
Little poems for you, and we're going on a journey above the earth in these poems. First, the moon leaves home. He had enough, looked after us for so long, controlled tides, seasons, madness, our lunar friend, protect us from meteorites on the dark side. Slowly he left us. We, the children, wondered why. NASA measured him every year as he drifted further away. Being the eldest of the family, I was selected to ask Moon why he was going. He replied crossly, every time we asked for your kids to help, all you do is throw it back in our faces. I thought we were all in this together, he cried. Mother Earth sighed when she heard us argue. With that, a volcano erupted in Iceland. Earthquakes hit Turkey. I noticed how old she was getting. Lines on her face, forehead and pores. Maybe she was tired of carrying the world on his shoulder. We all knew deep down that Moon and Earth were going to part, always pulling off each other. Together so long and now in their separate orbits. I'm going to have to document all this down. Got plenty of time. The trip to Anti-Mars will take at least 8 months. Our group one last to go before the tidal waves. When the divorce came through, it was like Armageddon. Okay. And see, this other part. It's called After I'd Flown Back Down to Earth. I've been doing some meditation, just trying to get some, I suppose, inspiration for writing. And the teacher had us, you know, imagining you were floating above the earth and then you came down. But when I came down, this darkness was on my shoulder. So that week as well, our eldest daughter, she just turned 17 and she went out to her first big dance and dressed up in a ball. So that, this is called After I'd Flown Back Down to Earth. After I had flown down, seen all the beauty of the world, just as my feet touched the ground, I saw it for a second, a darkness, a form, a shadow on my right shoulder. It must have attached itself to the space suit, and when I glimpsed it, fear touched me. One day later, my daughter appeared in our kitchen, 17, belle of the ball. What father could not but be proud, ringlets falling over bare shoulder, cream sheer dress, a dress of light colours. You see, after I had flown back down to earth, I felt the beat of the angel wings. She balanced on my shoulder, flapping, flapping away the dead leaves.
Thank you, Joe. And next we have Niall Harriet.
This is a piece of microfiction with an even more micro piece in it. I've called it Flash Fictional License. A creative writing facilitator asked the group, the writing group, to write a piece in under 50 words and to put into it the elements of religion, sex, suspense, politics,
yeah,
and pathos. This is what somebody came up with. This person had just read a rather speculative book on Michael Collins. And this is what he came up with. Good Lord, exclaimed Lady Lavery. I've just discovered I'm pregnant. Must have been after that weekend with Michael Collins and Winston Churchill as house guests during the Irish treaty talks. But who the hell is the father? It certainly isn't my husband, Sir John. He's become a bit of a monk these days. The writing facilitator said yes. It even had elements of the whodunit. Thanks.
Next we have Carl Holden, our five-word challenge winner.
Yo, hey, look at this. So I used to read your code a lot, but these days I haven't been writing so much. And this is a poem kind of about that. It is, unfortunately, as cliche as it is, called Writer's Block. When the well's gone dry, and you've scraped the bottom of the barrel so goddamn hard, you think you might come out in China. You're up shit creek with no canoe, feeling like a circus elephant with a peanut allergy. The light at the end of the tunnel honks as it sails by, and drenches you in puddle water, because you've got more plot holes than the very hungry caterpillar. And your 4 a.m. life-changing stroke of genius looks like it was written by an ancient Egyptian general practitioner after a heavy night on the date wine with the boys. You're feeling desperate enough to hold up the tooth fairy for pocket change, and you've been inspecting woodcuts to see if they've got any good lines. Yeah, when you've got the block so bad, you want to lay your head out on it and pray for the headsman. Well, even though it's so cliche, the plague avoids it. You could write about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. And next we have Robert Garvin.
I don't have anything that I wrote myself. I kind of got a bit caught up with college work. So instead, I'll be reading my favorite poem from my favorite author, Oscar Wilde. the harlot's house. We caught the tread of dancing feet. We loitered down the moonlit street and stopped beneath the harlot's house. Inside of the din and fray, we heard the loud musicians play the true leaves hers of Strauss. Like strange mechanical grotesques making fantastic arabesques, the shadows raced across the blind. We watched the ghostly dancers spin to sound of horn and violin, like black leaves wheeling in the wind. Like wire-pulled automatons, slim silhouetted skeletons went sidling through the slow quadrille, then took each other by the hand and danced a stately saraband. Their laughter echoed thin and shrill. Sometimes a clockwork puppet pressed a phantom lover to her breast. Sometimes they seemed to try to sing. Sometimes a horrible marionette came out and smoked its cigarette upon the steps like a live thing. Then, turning to my love, I said, "The dead are dancing with the dead. The dust is whirling with the dust." But she heard the violin and left my side and entered in. Love passed into the house of lust. Then suddenly the tune went false. The dancers wearied of the waltz. The shadows ceased to wheel and whirl. And on the long and silent street, the dawn with silver sandaled feet crept like a frightened girl.
Brilliant, thank you very much, Robert. And next we have good music, I think, again, with which one? Yeah. Oh, I thought you would say no. Yeah, why not?
Really? I met an old teacher today, and I haven't seen him for a good few months. And said, "Oh, good to see you, good to see you." I was doing, "Oh yeah, all good, all good. I just played 3 gigs last week. We just got it off 3 weeks ago, and never been busier. And what about you?" And he said, "Oh, I have to drink less. I have to drink less alcohol. I have to drink less coffee. And I'm going to the specialist from the head because it's not good with me." And then I said, "Wait a minute. Hey, this is my chance to share some experience." And I said, "First thing, you have to balance your diet. It's a very important thing. But then, did you try some mushrooms? And try to meditate. This makes the specialist's work easier." But then I said, "No. Why? Why am I saying this? I should play him a song." And this is, I call it birth. Hey, go on. I call it Berserk song because it's about going forward no matter what challenging problems and obstructions, just like you'd be climbing trees. Pocket synthesizer.
Thank you. And next we have Rab. Rab Woodhart.
There was a sting in the tail. Calchas stared at his hands, willing them to start shaking, but nothing, only stone or thoughts. Daisy chain making. He rose and turned, wide wall open, grinning, face front onto Hacko's ridden, saliva dripping, V-twin Harley snarling guard dog. Spring, deft turn and technique, crack, whimper, dead dog at his feet. Rubber-soled, near-silent glide, night watch person step aside and he'd arrived. Lock, pick, snip, click, inside, turn left, then right, upstairs, in here, safe. Draw breath. Crack, out roof light, into night, drain pipe, flight, swag bag, gold jewels and secrets, offshore banking details with evidence of fraud entailed. Main street, side street, off street, indoor, shut door and secure, shoes off, feet soft, the lure of the looker. Sovereign, Kruger rank, ruby, diamond, pearl. Rolodex, hard drive, top secret file. Blackmail, hate mail. Pawn shop, fence off, cash in. A kilogram of heroin. Average day for an ex-special forces junkie.
Thanks, Rev. And next we have Kieran McCartney.
Hey!
How's it going? So I'm going through somewhat of a celebration at the moment. I found my book the other day, which I had lost. And it was like a book that I had written when I was like 16 and 17, and I lost it, and it was like just work that was gone. But then it showed up in a box in my room, so it was hard. I had gone through like this whole emotional process of letting it go. So I'm going to indulge. It's called The Roll on the Curve. And before I start, I'd just like to congratulate my friend Saif, who's played just won the trauma category at Los Soul Medals. This is called The Roll on the Curve. And I never said it here before because I didn't understand what it meant. But then, in its reincarnated form, it makes sense. I read a book and created a character, a little girl called Penny Jold. I had a look to see the flowers in her hair and then her smile. And then she died and then she touched me. Somewhere inside I could have cried. I needed something, something else. I needed something that's what I felt. Something I could preserve, the roll and the curve. I had a girl in a dream. She was my world. She stole from me all the things I longed to see. How could it be that I'm happiest when I sleep? She didn't stay. I couldn't keep her. She went away, nothing to weep for. I needed something, something else. I needed something that's what I felt. Something I could preserve, the roll on the curve. I saw a picture of my youth. I was missing a front too. It was lost to experience. And then I laughed and broke a glass. Early learning, learning at last. You called it old, I called it fast. It was past, past. I needed something, something else. I needed something that's what I felt. Something I could preserve, the roll on the curve. I saw a play, it had its worth. There was a baby that died at birth. There was a sunset, there was a house. There was drink, but there was thirst. And which is worse? When the brother died, the mother sighed. When the father drank, his clothes stank. The sister gave thanks. The sister gave thanks. The sister gave thanks.
And is Simon Aronson still here?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a work in progress. I was called living with pain, reducing the morphine, but after the five-word challenge, I think breaking the mold sounds better. You are in pain. I cannot hear your pain. I cannot feel your pain. Perhaps I see traces. You are screaming. I cannot hear you scream. I cannot see you scream. I cannot feel you scream. Stuck in a cycle of pain, a thick glass ceiling that must be broken. You will see me no longer in pain. No longer in pain, a path only beginning, each step, each painful, screaming step is waiting impatient to shed my skin of pain. Shed the years to a time before lines were etched by pain, leaving pain's scars, emerging as you wish to be, no, as I wish to be, the old young me. Thank you.
Thanks, Simon, and best wishes to Bobby from all of us. Next we have Owen Murray.
Hello. I wrote this last week on a train in Dublin. It looks like it might appear to be spontaneous, but I guess I was trying to write it for about a week, really. It's got the working title of A Young Man Deliberates on Love and What to Do With It. Slink away, go down on the ground the electricity of too many thoughts, static and inert. Your love is a child, your love has no eyes, your love only sees your love, and only sees with your love. So how, why, when, will, should you trust, give in to, accept your love? Unrequited, your love is your love. Requited, your love is your love. When you're in love, when you see in love, can you find an agent to act on your behalf? To act on the behalf of love? Who can do you find? And the old psychiatrist, the old anti-psychiatry psychiatrist said, life is for living. Life is to struggle, to hurt, to distance yourself, to hide away is death, is to die. I've seen too many people get hurt once and say, never again. No, that is not the way. And you know that it's true because your heart says so, says I told you so, says all a heart can say, says love. Love in spite of friends' advice. Love in spite of friends' advice. Love in spite of any songwriter's advice. Love like you have no brain. People try to control things, he said. This cannot be done. So love and speak of love and write love 1,000 times until it's no longer a cliché. A woman enters the train, shivering, crying. I didn't look at her. I wasn't facing her direction. Someone's taking care of it. There's nothing I can do. This weekend I might see you, leaning over a cup of coffee into what I'm saying.
Thanks, Owen. And Paul Casey, will you regale us with a poem? So this one is for all the bar ladies and bar gentlemen in the world, especially in the next coming days. So this is for you, Donal, actually. I'm reading this for you, but it's not about you, per se. I used to work in loads of pubs when I was younger. It's called Bar Beings. Bar beings in some bars are unbearably bleak. The bar tops shine, beer mats are all brand new, but there's a blast of bitterness. There's broken beats abound in the heavy, quiet bouts. Not that they're always depressing bastards. I mean, you wouldn't hear them butchering the blues. I often just sense the poor buggers just bursting to get buried into a bottle of brandy or Bacardi or Bushmills. All those black labels, Buds and Becks, just staring up at them like lonely bar stools, waiting to be boosted and burled on some binge benefit beach way out of bounds. But they blow the business, the burden, and the bank would be bent on bouncing their bonds. Besides, they'd be backstabbing the boss, so they bear it. I go from baffled to bonkers just eyeballing them. What bowls me over is seeing them brighten up a bit once the banter and bustle begin. The busyness seems to abase the boredom and bring a buzz, banish the black bile. Bar beings in other bars bear belonging well. Even emptying bins, you'll often hear them whistle or hustle a bit of bebop maybe, a light breakbeat, beatboxing their way along, not a bother. No matter how backbreaking the barrels, they'd be belting out Bowie or Bronski beat, with a hold of brewing up with Billy Bragg, or go ballistic with Black Sabbath. Some bar ladies or ballerinas, pas de bourrée, their bubbly bums and belly dancing up and down the boozer, topping up bits and bobs in the liquid buffet while balancing beers and Bordeaux, basically blindfolded, regarding the last bead of Bailey's from the bottleneck as the buyers flower like bindweed along the bar counter. Bless them, happy to sort out the breakages. No brouhaha, ballyhoo, and the quiet bitching that booms in the frame like a burst bird vessel. Boom, blare and barb-free bliss, boundaryless breaths of fresh breezes, barbeings that blaze bright as banshees burning bacchanalian bonfires, those highballs of beaming brilliance.
Nearly the end of the evening, and I think we have Christy Parker there somewhere who will give us something.
Hey.
Okay. I
case we have to come up here after podcast, he
just... Deja vu.
The last time I was here, I think it was the last time, maybe a few weeks ago, I read a poem called A Bad Day. The really sad news, I'm going to read it again. The really, really sad news that I've added three verses to it. It's now called A Very Bad Day. The rent is overdue, the budgie has the flu, the dog is coughing too, I've a hole in every shoe, I've not had sex since 2002. The wife says we're true. The girls are round and speck about a stolen check from a waiter from Quebec. I got it in the neck, they left the place a wreck of a filthy fucking crew. The drugs I got on tick made me paranoid and sick. I overdosed on Evo stick. I said, doctor, help me quick. He said, not you again, you prick. The TV detector swore like many times before, then kicked in my door. Now a massive fine and more is what I have in store. Or 6 months in lieu. Well, I've got 40 bills to pay and more are underway. I'm on 60 fags a day, packets, that's to say. People call me the ashtray, wouldn't you? I've got typhoid from the sink and my car is on the blink. I must be the weakest link, I think. How much lower can I sink before I'm through? I'm on tablets, herbs and pills for a vast array of bills. I've written 13 wills. I'm drinking putting from the hills, but nothing ever kills. Though my legs are turning blue. I'm on Valium and Prozac, panic attack and no crack. I need to get back on track. The day has gone to black, not blue. I say to my psychiatrist, the peace for me does not exist. And here's another twist, I think I've got the gist. I'm on God's hit list, it's true. Everything is going wrong, every girl I know is gone. I'm hooked on Roy Orbison, I'm in every bloody song. Gone and put another on, make it two. I'm going round the bend, I don't know where to all end. I wish someone would send me a special friend to help my life to mend. Any one of you would do. Thank you.